The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 497. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
You feel a rush? I felt a rush somewhere.
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
Brett Murdoch.
What up?
Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
And Brian Majoma.
No more Olympics means no more memes.
Yeah, the memes are over. Memes are over. But they'll always stay with us. They'll always stay with us. All right, man. No Chris action. He is under the weather because when you're a parent, you always get sick. So that's how life be.
when you're a parent, you get down with the sickness.
You get down with the sickness. Oh, I can't even do that shit. Like, oh, man. Anyway, some interesting news happened, people. Crazy. We get into it. Thankfully, a certain person called Eurocar9 asked us a question about the breaking news. What do we think about Krafton Games taking over Tango Gameworks? All right, for you guys who may not know, Tango Gameworks, Microsoft shut them down a while back, you know, developer of Hi-Fi Rush, Evil Within, right? And they were still working on, like, you know, updates or whatever for Hi-Fi Rush. And now, you know, Krafton Games, they make, what is it, PUBG, right, Manny?
PUBG, and they also published what's-his-face's game? The Dead Space revival slash not revival.
Oh, the Callisto Protocol.
Callisto yeah. Protocol was also them too.
But yeah, the news just came out now. So I know, you know, if you're listening to us live, you'd be like, huh, Sunday night, that's a weird time. Remember, it's like morning in Asia. Matter of fact, I believe this news hit at 9 a.m. over there.
Yep.
So it makes perfect sense. Start of the news, start of the weekday and stuff. Pretty cool. So Manny, go ahead. I know you're a big Hi-Fi Rush fan. So what do you think of this news?
They've been through a lot, like, you know, being pulled into Bethesda slash ZeniMax, and then, you know, picked up by Microsoft, and then getting bought lock, stock and barrel from Microsoft, which is interesting to me because, you know, I guess whoever at Microsoft didn't see any sort of use for this franchise.
Yeah.
They just said, all right, we don't give a shit here. Take it. It's disappointing to me because it's like they didn't even want to keep the games around. So they just sold everything.
Yeah.
It's better. I mean, to be honest, I'm glad it's better. It was better off that they were on their own anyway, or at least from there. And, you know, I don't know too much about this company, but, you know, they are a Korean studio, and Korea is the new hotness these days.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if Stellar Blade isn't, you know, one of those things. So,
and there's another game that's out right now that's doing pretty fucking well.
Yeah, it's that multiplayer game, right? Yeah. The one with the girls in it.
Yep.
I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
but
let me read this real quick. This is because this is breaking news. This is from a PC Gamer. 3 months after Microsoft announced its closure, Hi-Fi Rush studio Tango Gameworks has found a new home with PUBG publisher Krafton. In an announcement today, the South Korean publisher describes the move as, quote, the first significant investment in the Japanese market, end quote. According to Krafton's statement, the move won't impact the availability of Tango Gameworks' back catalog, which also includes The Evil Within and Ghostwire Tokyo. It also says it will collaborate with Xbox and ZeniMax, and here's a quote, to ensure a smooth transition and maintain continuity at Tango Gameworks, allowing the talented team to continue developing the Hi-Fi Rush IP and explore future projects. So that's good. You know, they want to make sure it's like, you know, okay, we're moving you guys over here, but keep doing your thing, you know?
Now, the question is, like, it still isn't fully clear if they only have Hi-Fi Rush and it's just Tango Gameworks, or if it's all of their games.
Yeah, that's literally what this article says right here. And the guy's writing it in first person, which is something PC Gamer, by the way, just so you guys know, same parent company as where I work. Reading between the lines, I think that means Crafton either has no interest in making the further Evil Within or Ghostwire games, or else it hasn't purchased those IPs. I've reached out to Crafton for clarification and will update if I hear back. One thing seems pretty certain, though. Hi-Fi Rush is not dead. Okay, so I guess, you know, we're going to find out. Hey, you just own, do you have to buy the other IPs? Like, you know, what's happening here? Mm-hmm. But yeah, and again, they were like, no, we're going to keep this franchise going. And it makes sense because even though, yes, it obviously, quote unquote, didn't sell well, but it was everybody that played the game loved it. You know, very high critical praise. Keep it going, bro. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good thing. You know, and that's one of the problems that we have nowadays with new IPs. It's like people are afraid because if they don't sell a billion copies or whatever, they instantly get killed. It wasn't like that before. You would just keep trying, you know, in some cases.
But I mean, I also think that, you know, the gift and the curse of Game Pass is the fact that,
yeah,
you know, there's no direct profits being made off of it. Granted, they did, you know, Hi-Fi Rush did make it onto the Steam, one of the higher, when it was doing well, when it was selling on Steam, but I'm sure it wasn't like amazing gangbusters. But I think at the same time, it's like, imagine if every single person who was on Game Pass actually did pay for that title.
Yeah.
You know, but then again, it's like, you know, we don't know what the completion rate was. Maybe people just tested it and then turned it off, you know. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that these guys are willing to invest in the further development of these games and also future games by Tango Gaming.
Yeah. What do the rest of you guys think about this news?
I heard that I don't know if you mentioned this, but I heard they're retaining most of the studio people that were hired previously for Tango Gameworks.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. The studio hasn't officially closed yet.
Yeah,
they're obviously in the process of, you know, shutting everything down and finished, because they still have a few, like the last thing from Tango Gameworks was the Hi-Fi Rush limited run games physical edition and collector's edition that was announced. So that's probably something that's still happening.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty, pretty good news for the people at Tango. Cause I mean, they're dusting off the resumes, updating them, getting ready to either collect unemployment or trying to get into the job market, and knowing that they're, you know, at least for the time being, they're safe. That's pretty good news.
Yeah.
It makes sense that someone would take a shot at this, because, you know, Hi-Fi Rush, like Manny mentioned, we don't know what the metrics are for the game. Obviously, engagement goes into the metrics of how to define it as successful. And at this point, don't trust whatever the hell Aaron Greenberg says, because he said it, by all metrics, this was a success. But
and they still closed the studio. So yeah, what's the deal?
So don't trust Aaron Greenberg. But what we do know, without a shadow of a doubt, it was a critical success.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like Tony mentioned, everyone that played it, that we know, at least, you know, Brett, Manny, everyone that played it really liked it. So we know. We don't know what other IPs they're going to take with them except for Hi-Fi Rush, but we know that they can make a good Hi-Fi Rush game. So hopefully, if they do a sequel to this and create a franchise, hopefully the people who supported the game initially support it again, and, you know, more people get on board to play the next installment.
Get on board to feel the rush.
Yeah, I gotta say, I honestly think that this might just be a case of cost benefit analysis.
What do you mean?
Because like they didn't buy the other franchises, so like it would be
we don't know if they bought the other franchises.
Oh, okay, I misunderstood.
Yeah, we're not sure yet.
Yeah, the only thing that's for sure is that they did get Hi-Fi Rush. That's one of them.
Well, like, okay, so like, are they buying? Like, I guess my thing is like, are they buying franchises a la carte, or are they just kind of buying their whole portfolio? Because it sounds like
we don't know.
Okay, so
they bought the studio and they have Hi-Fi Rush. That's all we know.
That's all we know. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
is there any reason to think that they wouldn't have everything from the whole studio?
Again, I mean, we don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't know. I realize that. In other words, is it like a lock, stock, and barrel sort of deal? We're like, okay, we get Hive, we get Tango Gameworks, we get the two other titles that they're known for, you know, Evil Within and Ghostwire, and that's it. They don't have a lot of franchises. They only had really three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen this. Was it Crystal Dynamics or one of those studios that sold? They were just going at, you know, piece by piece, getting different IPs from the studio. It wasn't necessarily the entire studios, but, you know, some IPs they were getting. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, but in those instances, they didn't also buy the studio, did they?
For THQ Nordic, they just bought the franchises. With the exception of the studio that did not Just Cause, the Grand Theft Auto sort of one.
Saints Row.
Yeah, they bought the company that did Saints Row, and they had Saints Row. So it's interesting because it usually doesn't go that way. Like if you're either buying a studio or you're buying a franchise, you usually don't get them together. Especially if the main studio that owns them sees those properties as viable. Like, in other words, let's say somebody got their hands on, especially from like a big studio. Like, I don't know of any other situation of just essentially buying a studio that was already established studio that was somebody of some at some other studio and then getting all of the rights to all their games back.
Well, it's like if a studio buys 343, you're not assuming that Halo comes with them.
Yes. Like, maybe Microsoft, you know, like in that situation, maybe Microsoft sees it as beneficial to keep that, to keep Halo and, you know, essentially, relieve themselves of 343.
Yeah, that could work. Interesting. All right.
The other question is, does Microsoft see something like a Ghostwire Tokyo and Evil Within as things that they want to keep? To be honest, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I think otherwise they're just going to
kept the studio,
Yeah, I mean, it would be silly if they did, because who's gonna develop those games, and who's gonna care if you know, Ghostwire didn't do amazingly. It was sort of a middle A title, but I'm like, who would develop it? In I don't think they need it.
It was not good. Like, I was actually excited for Ghostwire Tokyo, and I played it. I'll be honest, it was kind of it left a lot to be desired. And it was middling. It was mediocre in just about every way. The best way I can start, it felt like an Ubisoft game. So it just, like, the enemy types were reused and rehashed. Like, it wasn't this kind of deep dive into kind of Shinto mythology that you thought it would be. There was like kind of a few different ideas, and some of them were well executed, but for the most part, it felt pretty bare bones.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't hit the mark, kind of like that first person shooter sorcerer game came and went without anybody really noticing. And I did play it, and it it wasn't, I played it, and it wasn't good enough for Game Pass. So one thing that I think a lot of people miss when they're having this discussion is they're like, yes, they had the Evil Within, which was a well regarded but honestly not super successful series.
Yeah.
And then you had Hi-Fi Rush, their AA smaller game, which was doing gangbusters and amazingly well, but the AAA game that they had released recently, it did very poorly.
Yeah. By the way, just quick correction: Hi-Fi Rush did not meet sales expectations, according to Microsoft.
Okay. Well, then, yeah. I mean, if you combine all three of those, I can see why they kind of, you know, got rid of the studio. And I don't mean that to sound callous or heartless in any way. I'm speaking simply on results and metrics of, you know, if their big AAA game didn't do well and their AA game didn't meet sales expectations, and, you know, they're just leaning on the Evil Within, and some people really like that game. It's got a good name, but it doesn't have like a rabid fan base. You know what I mean? Like, so there's
actually, it does. It has a very rabid niche fan base, I would say.
Oh, okay. I knew people said good things about it, but I didn't know there were like people clamoring for it. But yeah, maybe it's just a smaller, more passionate.
Very small, passionate.
Yeah.
You know what? Remnant's kind of the same way. I love that game. I'm not talking shit. I cannot clarify that enough. All I'm saying is your big title didn't do well. Your middle title didn't meet expectations, and the things down the pipeline weren't really staged for a large audience. So I think that's why they got the axe.
Yeah, I would agree. If I were to predict if they were all those IPs would go over, I would say yes. Because I just feel like if they're gonna buy them, might as well just get everything, especially for franchises that haven't been doing well. So it seems like slim pickings at that point. Obviously, Hi-Fi Rush I think would be the big get. So if there was anything Microsoft would sort of qualm with giving away, it would be Hi-Fi Rush. But they got that, so I wouldn't be surprised if the rest of the franchises go out there. And like Brad mentioned, they're not doing gangbusters, like,
yeah.
It's not like these highly touted franchises.
And if they can get a little bit of money off of it, why not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's move on. Other questions here. Jay Shep,
yo.
Question here. Excuse me. The Throwdown crew are professionals, unlike some others on social media who break embargoes. For the crew, for the crew members who have demoed the game and can answer this question, do you think Black Myth Wukong has what it takes to win Game of the Year? Well, as you said, we are professionals here, so I'm not going to answer that question. However, I do want to talk about our good friend, Mr. Harry Enda Henderson's. He did it again, people. He did it again. Posted about when the Black Myth Wukong embargo lifts, right? And it's like, bro, here's the thing. Because we were initially saying, how is he getting away with it? It's because he is not directly breaking embargo himself. Someone's telling him this stuff. This is just what I think is happening. Someone's telling him this stuff, and then he posts it out there. That way, he's probably not getting the game himself, right? So he's technically not breaking embargo because he didn't sign the NDA. And then the person who gave him that information, we don't know who it is. So they are breaking NDA, but they're not going to be found out, So it's, again, I've complained about this before. I'm going to keep complaining about it again. It's very fucked up. You have people like me and Rich honoring the fucking embargoes. Even now, this dude posted the embargo. I'm still not going to tell you when it is because I made that agreement, Yeah, it's fucked up. It's fucked up.
There have been people who have been slapped pretty damn hard for even posting stuff about things that they shouldn't know about.
Yeah,
some of those guys that those guys essentially who managed to get their hands on an early copy of said big title, and they didn't get it directly from the studio. And they've been slapped pretty damn hard about that too.
Yeah,
Getting like strikes on their YouTube channels and all kinds of stuff like that. He may not get like something like that where, in other words, they'll stop him from getting games because they don't send it to him. But that don't mean that they can't strike his tweet about it, or essentially give him a really hard time for doing stupid.
They could,
like that.
But the problem is, since this dude, for whatever reason, is big in the gaming industry, they leave it alone. That's the other problem.
He's protected.
Yeah, he's protected. If he was a smaller, if it was me and Rich, we'd suffer for that. Absolutely.
Apparently, it's like in other words, you're big enough too big enough to play the game. Everybody else has to play by the rules, but homeboy can just go willy nilly, learn some shit that he shouldn't know about, and then just start posting about it.
Yeah. Jay Shep in the chat, he goes, "How hasn't he burned bridges in the gaming industry right now?" Again, when you are like him, where he has so much clout, he could burn all the bridges he wants. It doesn't fucking matter because companies still want to talk to him because, he's big. It's fucked up,
They see, because in general, I hate to say this, but reviewers and stuff like that, they don't make companies money. It's influencers that make them money. And if they are part of the advertising budget. because they're not, you know, because they can, you know, you can't.
By the way, this guy's defense, he's not a YouTuber. He's a writer.
Oh, what? Okay, he's a writer. Yeah. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I thought he was.
No, he's not a YouTuber. He's a writer. So
okay. He's big enough. He has enough influence enough to where he's apparently somehow immune to any of this sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's insane. Rich, what are your thoughts, man?
Well, first and foremost, let me just say this right now, Tony. I liked how you teed up this question at the very beginning, where you said, well, we are professionals, so we will not talk about this game in any capacity. So that was great.
Listen, you're going to hear our thoughts on the game later on, but you ain't going to hear nothing now. You know,
because I like that dramatic pause there, Tony. Yeah. By the way, like later on.
Yeah. Well, think about it. This is one of the biggest games of the year. You think we're not going to talk about it? Of course we were. Yes. You know.
Well, no, but I mean, it's like people are probably chomping at the bit. Oh my God, Tony's going to talk about it. You know, Tony's not going to.
I'm not talking about shit, like you said. We're like Rich, right? We're professionals around here. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, people.
Exactly. What is this? What is this Wukong thing that you're talking about? I don't know. Anyway, you mean the book?
Yeah, the
Wukong. I wrote it. It's a type of Pilates.
There actually is a game on PS4 right now called Wukong.
Wukong's public domain. Anybody can make a Wukong pretty much. Game.
Anyway, Rich, go ahead, man.
Well, yeah, but to go back to what was being said, I really don't like when people break embargoes. We see this every year, obviously. And of course, some of the people that we know in our circles, such as Danny and Paris, they also Gamertag Radio. They mm-hmm. see this stuff as well, and they call it out as well. I just don't understand why people keep getting away with it. But I do anticipate and expect that there will be a lot more of this happening, because there are a lot of other games also coming out later this year that are, I guess, pretty anticipated. So you know it's going to continue, because nobody's doing anything about it. So it is what it is.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned. Go ahead, Brad. Go ahead.
I hate to be the cynic and the realist here, but the reason they keep talking to him is because he is a platform, and that makes them money, and they are driven by profit, not morality. Well,
that's what I said.
Oh, I know. I just wanted to put it in the bare bones, like cynical point. Like, it just makes them money. We care. People care. Business don't care. Simple.
It's insane, man. By the way, Rich, it's funny you brought up Danny in Paris, because because we're in a group chat together, and I was yelling about this with them earlier on, you know. I sent the link and I said, dude legit pisses me off. He always does this shit. And Paris goes, LOL, yup, because, you know, we always talk about this dude specifically, you know. Yeah, Jay Shep asked, if a reviewer demos a game at a game showcase, does that mean they can't talk about it if they decide to review it later on? Again, it depends on what the PR people tell you, you know? If they tell you don't talk about the game, you don't talk about the game. But I think I know where you're going with this. If a reviewer plays a game at like Comic-Con where people behind you, regular people could play it, you could go ahead and play it. You could go ahead and write about it. That's fine, you know. But if you go,
because in that situation, it's open to the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in that case, you could talk about it whenever you want. There's no NDA.
You cut me too much cheese.
Yes, Brett. Just a little bit more cheese, please.
Sorry. you can have it. This shit is good.
Oh man, I bet. Fuck. I wish I was having that right now. It's just story time with Brett.
Yep.
He's distracting me right now.
Damn it.
Give me the cheese.
Cheese.
I just ate the cheese. Good stuff. The fuck I said. Okay, but if it's a behind closed doors demo, then you gotta, you know, abide with whatever NDA it is. And Rich, you can answer this for me. As far as I know, there are no Wukong demos out there. It wasn't shown at a show or anything that I know of, like a public show, right?
Well, actually, that's not entirely correct, because at Summer Games Fest there was a preview demo available, but that depended on if you were able to get an appointment, because right as soon as they announced that they was there, them appointments filled up real fast.
Yeah,
but there was a preview there.
Was that under embargo?
That was under embargo.
Okay, so again, Rich, we're professionals around here, you know. Go ahead, bro.
Just to put a smaller point on that, like, it's not a lawyery type thing, right? It's not like, well, technically it was here, so I then theoretically should have the right to post about it. Like, if you have questions about that thing, you reach out to the PR team and you fucking ask them. Because even if you're technically right and you piss them off, you still burnt that bridge, right? So it's not about what you can technically get away with. It's about maintaining a good relationship with people. And that is rarely done by being a huge stickler to exactly the rules. So, like, you're not going to get a situation where you're going to have a gotcha and be like, ha, gotcha, I am allowed to release this video, and then expect to get their next video game, right? Like, that's not 100% how it works. Right. You're trying to keep a good relationship going. So it's a much softer, blurrier line that a lot of times has a lot of back and forth asking for permission. So in this case, where it's like, yeah, technically they were showing Wukong, blah, 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 even if you posted about it, you would probably make very clear that you were discussing the version that was demoed at blank and not the final product that is soon to be released.
Yeah. But even then, if you do that without, you know, outside of the NDA, then it's a problem, you know? But you are, I'm really glad you made that point. That is 100% right. You can technically find a loophole that you're not violating the, you know, the NDA, but you just made a fucking asshole of yourself and they're not going to rock with you again, you know? So that's why you got to maintain good relationships, man. Don't be a dick, you know? But again, this motherfucker is getting away with it, not only because he's big, but because he isn't, the information was not given him, so, like, from the company. Somebody, some other journalist has given him the information, you know? So he could circumvent shit. Very slimy stuff, you know?
Like, here's the thing, like, a lot, you know, obviously a lot of journalists behind, you know, Tony said it behind the thing, a lot of the guys talk to each other, you know, behind closed doors, but everybody has the understanding that what you are saying to the other journalists, if you are speaking to each other about these things, is the fact that you, despite if you didn't get a code or you didn't get this information, that doesn't give you the right to use that.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately,
but
we're
Tombo, yeah. But yeah. Tombo doesn't do that.
Yeah, he
blabs that shit all over the place.
And unfortunately, he's gonna keep doing this. He keeps doing this. You know, it's insane, man.
Well, and the part that pisses me off, it's like, it's not even impressive what he's doing.
It's not. It really isn't. It's cheap shit. Earth, your review embargo. No,
it's just telling the embargo for which is, it's like information, you know, like, it's not like, you know, really secret information. It's just a cheap pop in general. Yeah. You know? Oh.
Yeah.
It's not even a scoop.
It's not, because somebody's given him the information. He didn't dig it up.
Information. Yeah. Go ahead.
It's not even a scoop. No, you're right. It's not even a scoop because hundreds of people that are not even related to the company know this information. So it's like, it pisses me off because I saw that someone posted on the Throwdown Discord the tweet, and he's like, oh, people getting their review codes out. He said that like days after that the fact.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that people already knew about this shit.
Oh yeah, yeah. Great point. That is true. You know. Oh yeah, he posted that way, way after the fact. That, like, among journalists who are reviewing the game, they got that information already. But he, again, he's doing that slick shit where he's posting it close enough where he doesn't get in trouble. Because he would have posted that, you know, when we knew that information, you know, behind the scenes, then it would have been bad, you know?
Yeah.
And I can at least say that part. Yes, I knew the embargo many weeks before this, you know? But this guy, again, he timed it just right. You notice he did this shit exactly a week before the embargo lifts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But think about that, like, the second he doesn't have as big of a platform, he's going to be dropped like
Absolutely.
Like, he has numbered his days in the industry by acting like, and that's fine. Like, if he's trying to, I mean, it's not fine. I don't think so. I don't know why I said that. I mean, he's cashing in the longevity of his career for
clout right now. And mm-hmm. that feels, at least to me, like a big mistake. But if that's the way you want to play your career, that's the way you want to play your career.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. Good luck, buddy. You know? All right, man.
Here we are in 5 years.
Yeah, right. All right, moving on. Another one from Jay Shep. In a recent interview, the CEO of Take-Two said the company wouldn't put GTA 6 on a subscription service on day one because our decisions are rational. What are your thoughts?
Whoa. They're going to get people hooked first, Tony. You can't put it out on day one. They get a free month.
Yeah, but it makes sense. You know, it's like, it may, I know it sounds like a cheap dig at a Game Pass right there, mm-hmm. you know? Again, they want to sell copies, bro. They're not going to put this shit on any subscription service.
Also, can I just take a second to talk some shit?
Oh, go ahead, bro. Real quick.
The reason I'm putting it on a fucking subscription service is because they do a more predatory thing that makes them more money as it is. They're mm-hmm. they're acting like, oh, we wouldn't put that on a subscription service. Meanwhile, it's just fucking people with shark cards. Like, really? Really? Don't fucking take the high road on this one. You're not better. You're just different.
Yeah, and remember, you know they're going to get people on the double dip, right? Because they're going to reach the console version first and then the PC version first later, you know?
Yeah, I understand why he's saying it, because you're literally following up the best-selling game of all time.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's
not much of entertainment of all time.
Yeah, so it's like, one of the main benefactors for Game Pass is outreach, you know? Getting games that otherwise people wouldn't have played to play them in your service. I mean, Grand Theft Auto, there's literally hundreds of millions of people have played this franchise. So yeah, it makes sense. But yeah, it is a cheap shot at Game Pass.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. But yeah,
the motherfucker wouldn't have been saying this if he was working on indie games.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. He wouldn't be saying none of that. You know. Yeah, but yeah, there's not really much more to say about that. A very interesting statement. All right, here's another one from Jay Shep. It's just been reported that Geralt will be a side character, not the lead character in The Witcher 4. How do you guys think this will be received by fans of the series? Probably as well as when they made Geralt a side character in the fucking TV show. Not well, you know?
Who's the main character?
His daughter.
It probably will be, right?
Yeah, yeah. They built up that character in the last game. I think that's safe to say that's who's going to be the star of the next game.
Yeah.
Can we have those conversations?
Can I just ask? I thought this was known, because I'm certain this was the case when they announced like the next Witcher game was not going to be around Geralt.
Yeah.
That feels like the narrative around that feels like it makes it. Like, I don't. It's one of those things where, like, if you, doing that is fine, changing your protagonist is fine. Like, as long as the narrative feels like it calls for it. Like, I feel like that. If you're going, what's her name? Siri? Is that correct? I'm probably totally wrong here, but
I thought it was Alexa.
No, that's correct. That's correct. It is Siri.
Okay, so yeah, if they're following around Siri, then that feels like it makes a narrative sense, and it feels like after a trilogy of watching Geralt, it's a generational thing, like. That ties well in just, like, it doesn't sound like bad writing. It could still be bad writing, but it doesn't feel ham-fisted or poorly written or whatever. Like, that feels like a natural transition. I think if we move to Atreus in the next God of War, that's going to feel a little fast for me, right? Like, we need Kratos for another couple of games at least before we're ready to pass that torch on. But I feel like, I don't know, am I the only one that feels like it's we can have Ciri pick it up, and I think the story would be kind of okay there.
Yeah, no, the question is, do you think fans will be okay with that overall?
That's my point. Like, I don't think fans just necessarily see girl replacing my main character and start frothing at the mouth. Some of them do. But generally, I think that audiences honestly, maybe I'm giving people too much credit. I think they're a bit more nuanced than that. I think if it feels justified, if it feels all right, then they'll accept if it feels like it's trying to be jammed down their throat, then they're going to push back on it.
Well, the whole thing here is that the conversation's going to transcend gaming because of the narrative that'll start popping up. So, you know, it looks like I haven't played The Witcher 3. I've only played like the first hour of it, so I don't have that much thoughts on the characters, but if it looks like they did a good job at hinting and leading on to this character being a main character for the series, and that's great. If not, then you know probably the fans of the franchise would have issues with it. But if the fans with the franchise fans of the franchise don't have issues with this, then I lean to what they would say. But I will say this: the conversations when this game comes out is going to be toxic as fuck. Just get ready for it.
Yeah, Jay Shep. He goes, I wonder if a certain consulting firm is involved.
Oh God, I hope not.
We don't know. Hopefully not. But I think it all depends on how it's written, because for the most part, going back to what Carlos just said, Ciri did play a really large part in the third game, and she was written very nicely. Everyone liked her from that. So if they carry on that type of writing, then I think they would be fine. However, if they decide to go down the route of the Netflix TV show and try to adapt that series into the games, then I think that's when the problems would start. So it all depends on how they write it. And that kind of all depends on whether or not that consultancy company or like it are involved. So it's kind of weirdly all hinges on that, in my opinion. Because again, the writing on the third game, she's written very well. She's a very likable character. She has stuff she does. You know, she makes sense. You know, she even gets like her own part in the game where it's just like, oh yeah, you play as her for like a few missions. And it's like, okay, that's fine. You know, no one had an issue playing her in the third game at all, as far as I remember. So hence, as long as they keep up that style of writing from the third game, then I think they'll do well. But if they don't, then... oh, well.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on here. A couple of sponsored questions from a gentleman called Romudeath. He is sponsoring more J-Shep questions. All right, here's the question. A quote-unquote insider on Twitter suggests that 2025 and 2026 will be great years for the PS5 based on some imaginary games that PS Studios has in development. I have zero confidence in this. What are your thoughts? I agree with you. I think don't listen to any insiders on Twitter or insiders, period. You know, I don't know what do they have for 2025,
2026?
Wolverine?
Yeah. I think Wolverine's coming in 2025.
Yeah.
I think they're saying they're unannounced games, aren't they?
Maybe. I don't know. But again, like, do you honestly think the PS5's best days are ahead of it? I don't think so.
Well,
I don't think they are.
Go ahead, Rich.
One comment to make, I'm surprised of Carlos's response, because one of his most anticipated games is coming next year, Death Stranding 2. So I guess, yes, there you go. That's something.
Yeah, I mean, even if the titles were known, it's the gaming industry. We don't know when they're going to come out.
Yeah.
So they could be announced next year. It's like, oh, next year in 2025. Oh, we're announcing Uncharted 5. We don't know when it's going to come out.
Yeah, I don't trust release dates anymore, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, I wouldn't take this insider statements to heart, because we saw, you know, and remember, this is coming. We got a lot of heat. We got a lot of flack. Earlier this year, late last year, when we said Sony doesn't have anything for this year,
yeah,
and you know, I mean, for those that love Helldivers,
Astro's Playroom, that's yeah, what they got.
We got Astro, we got Concord, and Helldivers 2, and two of them are service games. So if you're into those, then I'm pretty sure you're eating good. Well, I don't know about Concord, but only Rich is eating good with Concord.
You mean Crapcord? Yeah, we have to use the correct name. Yes, that's it.
Yeah, so we'll see 2025, 2026. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised Wolverine launches within those years, because Insomniac does deserve the benefit of the doubt when it comes to track records and release dates. Other than that, no freaking clue. I don't think anyone does.
No.
Not even these insiders.
You know, again, we've been asking this question this entire year, and it's always crickets, you know? Not even the fans, the hardcore guys. No. We'll see. All right. Another question here. Did anyone on the panel see the limited edition Astrobot DualSense controller? If so, what are your thoughts? Yeah, it looks nice.
It looks like an Astrobot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing to it. I wasn't really that impressed by it.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, I think the controller looks nice. My message to Sony, do not be like Xbox. Focus on games. I don't want to see all these controllers.
Yeah.
So,
PlayStation is the least of the controller problem. Microsoft has more controller and exclusive consoles than they do actual fucking exclusive games.
You know. Yeah, and well, as long as they don't, going down this road. Oh, go ahead, Brian. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, if Sony keeps going down this road, then so will they.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, right.
Yep. I was gonna say, Rich, at least they didn't put an ass cheek on the back of this controller. You know,
they have more custom plates than exclusives.
Yeah, they do. Shoot, it's funny, man.
I have a question. Does the touchpad light up? Because on the video it showed like it lit up, but I don't know if it was just an effect or.
Well, is it? Doesn't it light up around the edges? Like
the eyes in the touchpad.
Yeah, the eyes, because it's got the Astrobot's eyes on the touchpad. My guess is that if it does glow, it's probably transparent. Like that section of it is transparent, so that it can you can see through it. But I've never seen any controller really do that where they backlit the actual pad itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it looked like it in the video, so I was like, "Whoa, shit, this is new." I was like, "Excuse me, I might dish out a couple. I don't know. It depends on how much it costs. Probably cost like $100 or some bullshit like that." But
yeah,
it looks all right. I mean, if you're into limited edition controllers and stuff like that, then this is good. But I mean, I would recommend more the ass cheeks 360. I mean, the Xbox controller from Deadpool.
Yeah. Would you say the controller is booty butt cheeks?
It is booty butt cheeks, literally.
You know? All right, man. Good stuff. All right. All right. We got another one from Mr. Eurocar.
Excuse me?
Yeah. For those who are getting Warhammer 40K, which platform will you get it on? So, first of all, who's getting this game?
Brett. I don't know. I don't think Brett. Brett?
I know Chris is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Chris is getting it?
Who's not getting the game?
I'm getting it.
Okay, so Brett, what platform then?
Yeah, Xbox.
Probably Xbox, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Brian, PC, I'm guessing?
Yes, I'm guessing Chris is getting on PlayStation.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
You're all splintered and spread all over the place.
Yeah. ain't nobody getting on Switch, though.
Excuse me? Is it coming out on the Switch?
No, it's not. I'm just fucking around.
What's a Switch?
I mean, yeah, what is that?
I was gonna ask did you want something to warm your house? Because it probably will set itself on fire from a game like that.
Oh shit! Yeah, I was just curious because I know and Adam's getting it. I don't know where he's gonna get it, but
wait, hold on. You were curious, or was Eurocar curious?
No, I was curious on what Eurocar's implications
are. Ah, gotcha.
Well, I can answer that question, Carlos. I believe that Adam and myself are going to get it on Xbox. I will say this. I wish I had a great PC, because obviously it's going to be the best on PC. But it's going to take a while to really upgrade that PC and get it to where I need to get it to. So it's got to be Xbox.
Yeah. Manny, I'm guessing you're not, getting this.
No, I have no interest in that game.
Yeah. Right now, for me, no, because I'm not a Warhammer guy. I don't know anything about it, so no interest. But I do have this Warhammer novel. Maybe if I read this and I'm interested, maybe I will get the game. But my other question is, because this is Warhammer 40K 2, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes. do you need to play the first one?
I don't know, but I wouldn't really think so. Like, there's not really, I don't want to sound harsh, but there's not really much there in terms of, I don't assume that there would be much there lore-wise that you'd want to really go through. Because the story itself is relatively simple enough. Aliens exist, take over a planet that creates war machines, and you're pretty much the space marine, and you stop them. And right, then there's enough. Demons.
Because I thought, Warhammer had this like ultra crazy super deep lore, you know. So I was like, I don't know about all that.
It does.
Yeah. So you can understand why I'm hesitant. You know.
Tony, I went to the first game knowing absolutely nothing about Warhammer apart from the fact that they have those miniatures.
Yes.
And that's literally all I knew, is that you get the miniatures from Games Workshop, you paint them, and that's all I knew about Warhammer. And I went in the first game, loved it. So you can literally go in pretty much blind and just enjoy the story for what it is. Obviously, if you know more about the lore, then you'll get more out of it. But yeah. Like, for example, I still don't know the difference between a Space Marine and an Ultramarine. I'm guessing there's a difference, but I have no idea. But yeah, I think you should be fine.
Yeah, but again, you know, I have to see, because as soon as I saw Warhammer, like, I'm good. I'm not familiar with this franchise. Like I said,
you don't really have to be. Like, okay, yeah. So I'm going to clarify something for you, but also for some other people out there who might be a little bit kind of hesitant, because yes, there's like a big backlog, but it's not like a bunch of other things. Like, Warhammer is just, it's basically a nihilistic kind of battle grunge universe, right? Like, nothing matters in this universe. All that you need to know is that there's a bunch of different species and they're all trying to kill you. And like, so for like, you can get into lore like, oh, the humans basically have learned to kind of transcend their humanity, and their god emperor is kind of this necromancer that has to be fed 1,000 living souls in sacrifice per day to keep his immortality going. And so the whole of humanity has devolved into this weird fascist superior race kind of thing. It's super weird, but then all of the other factions have their own equally deep lore. Some of them are like elves that turned into technomancy and now they're all undead. My personal favorite are the orcs, which I think are like, there's in this universe, they're a kind of a spore that grows into a fully grown orc, so they can seed worlds as a bioweapon and murder them all. But my favorite bit is, like, the orcs are secretly the universe's most powerful psionics, so, like, when they build a spaceship, it is in no way a functioning spaceship. It's just that the collective ideology of everybody on board believing it's a spaceship allows it to function like a spaceship. Like, the orc spacecrafts, they don't have any navigation. They just have a big red button that says go.
Yeah.
And their collective belief that, in the same way, like, the orcs believe that things that are painted red go faster. And so when they paint things red, they indeed do go faster. I fucking love. And, like, I think that's the thing with everybody, is everybody kind of finds a faction that they just kind of fall in love with. And they, you know, kind of find out the lore from that. But even a lot of people who play don't know a lot of the lore, especially the lore outside of, like, whatever race that they're trying to play. So all you really need to know is that's like asking, what is the story behind Wacky Racers? There's a bunch of racers, they're wacky, and each one wants to win. The end. That's all you really need to know. So if you are a Space Marine or an Ultramarine, and you are put in front of literally anything else that is not a human, you murder it. Because everything in the universe that is not human wants to kill you. There are no friends, there are no treaties, it is an entirely horrible, grimdark universe. And I think to some people that's been at the draw, myself included. Like, I like that there's no happy sunshine answer here. I like that there's nothing, there's no good in the earth. Everything is just pure nihilistic grimdark. They're not trying to hide, like, they're not being like, everything's great. Like, no, it's just, it is what it is. Have fun being terrible.
Nice.
One of the things that I like that Brett kind of touched upon is, again, the orcs. So in the game, you fight orcs that are jet troopers. So usually you'd expect them to be like, okay, they have like a jetpack and all sorts of all science and sophisticated and whatnot. No, the orcs just tie themselves to an Acme rocket, and that's the jet trooper division. So yeah, it's wacky, but it's also terrifying at the same time. And the rockets are painted red because, as Brett said, that's how they go. It's beautiful.
Nice.
All right. By the way,
hey, what's up?
The game apparently is crossplay.
Excuse me?
It says you can play Warhammer 40,000 Space Marines 2 crossplay on launch day. Creative director Oliver Hollis Lake said cross-platform play will be available on day one. There we go. And it says Warhammer Space Marines launches on PC, PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S.
That's
so, that's pretty cool. So Just ignore Eurocar's question.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. It's not everything. Get it whatever you want. Doesn't matter.
Tony, did you see the clip on YouTube where like there's like a guy and then like a xenomorph jumps out of nowhere and then he grabs it from out of midair, slams it to the floor and punches it to death?
A xenomorph from Alien?
Sorry. Again, my universe is mixed up. The alien thing jumps out. I don't know what it's called.
Okay.
It has a name.
Yeah.
Have you seen that clip? You must have seen that clip.
Maybe. All I remember from that trailer was big beefy dudes with machine guns. That's all I remember.
Yes, that is the game.
Yeah.
It's like sticking the Gears of War people in the aliens world.
Yeah.
And mixing some Doom. And apparently someone said in that video that it's also a mix of Baldur's Gate 3 somehow.
Okay, how does that work?
I don't know, but that's all the comments were, just confused people. Like, how is this Baldur's Gate 3?
Hmm.
Anyway, you must have seen that clip. It was going around and it... Okay, I will find it. I'll post it in the chat and then you let me know.
All right. Post it in the Twitter so I can see it better because I'm not going to be able to see it on Discord right now. All right, let's move on. Next question from Jolly Yellow Nerd. He actually asked us this last week, but it was during the middle of the show, so I didn't see it. But he did say, hey, you could use it on the next show, which we are. It's common for service games to start off massively popular and then have a huge player drop off after a few months. Then we get a flood of X game is dying articles and posts. Do you think that X game is dying sentiment is coming from people who are not interested in playing anymore, but instead of just walking away, they have to try to kill the game to sort of justify walking away from it? It is as if they are too scared to just stop playing the game on their own and want the ego boost or whatever of predicting the death of the game. No, I don't think so, because most of the people saying that are journalists who haven't even played these games. The reason those articles exist is because it's quick, cheap hits. You know, this popular game isn't popular anymore. The people writing it have no vested interest in the game whatsoever. They're probably not even playing it. Here's some insider shit. Most game journalists don't play online games. I know this because every time I get an online game review, there's nobody to fucking play it with. You know, they don't do that stuff. So, no, they don't have an interest to kill the game because they walked away from it because they never even played it in the first place. You know, so that's definitely not happening. All right. Moving
real
on.
Quick.
Oh, what's up, dude?
I just want to throw in there, like, unfortunately, I don't know why, I don't know how it came this way, but, like, we live in a world that judges its metrics based off of interaction, and rage clicking on something is the same as not as, like, actually being interested. I mean, like, the weird thing that bothers me, and I don't know how we got here, and I kind of want to pose this to the group at some point, not necessarily, not just, like, how did we get to a point where companies thought that you clicking on something because you thought it was the dumbest fucking thing that you've ever seen is equally good to you actually clicking on it and be like, that was really cool. I should do this more. Where did this false equivalency came from? Because anybody who's actually, you know, fucking lived on planet Earth knows it's not the same goddamn thing, but the internet and every goddamn algorithm seems to run off of, if you've gone near it because you hate it, you must love it, right? Like, I cannot stand this shit.
Yeah. Here's the thing. The quality doesn't matter. Does it get us hits? That's what matters. They don't give a shit about the quality of it. It's just...
Oh, it should. It should, though, because you as the customer care about the quality.
Yeah, but again, that's not how these companies think. They think, this will get us hits. Do that. Quality be damned.
And that's...
You know?
And that's why you get sensationalist titles and stuff,
yep,
just to get people to come to their site for a couple of seconds or to retweet their article,
yep,
or repost their article, because they want that jerk reaction.
Yep.
And you find, and it's funny because in a lot of cases, if you actually read the article that, you know, was connected to the sensationalist title, you notice that the article doesn't match the tone of the title.
Yeah. The article sometimes is not as sensationalist as the headline, but they got to get that headline because they know it'll draw you in, you know.
Oh no, I've seen even worse. I've seen where they figure out where the headline is going to be cut off, and so they'll say things like Elden Ring's player count has dropped blah blah blah,
yeah,
This is why it's not dot dot dot, and this is why it's not a big deal, and you're like, son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's another tactic that they use.
Gotcha. Know? That's how they do it.
Yeah. All right, Brian, let me see this clip real quick. Actually, no, I haven't seen the clip before. All right, that was cool. Yeah, he's fucking the shit out of monsters. Cool stuff. All right, but yeah, Brett, it sucks, but it's the way it is, man. All right, moving on, GZDR. He asked us what gaming magazines we subscribe to. We answered that in previous episode. This one's an interesting question. I didn't know this was a thing. What were some great demo discs that you received from GameStop pre-orders in the past? I don't recall ever having that happen with me.
I've never got a game, and they always ran out of game, like discs whenever there was one offered. The only time I ever really got them is when I went to, when I used to have the, it wasn't even a subscription. You just had a mailing list for PlayStation Underground, and they'd send you a demo disc every so often. But a lot of times I wouldn't get my demo disc because they usually got stolen.
Yeah, the only way I would get demo discs is if I find them in the magazine, like right there, you know. But like you said, sometimes they just be stolen, you know. So
it was rare when I got them in the mail, but I'm sure because Sony didn't, you know, cover them up in any way. So either the mailman or whoever saw the cool looking disc and said, "Oh, I'm gonna take this." So
because the whole magazine was in like a
cheap. Yeah, it was a cheap cardboard, like, you know, thing with, it's like they just sent you a disc with a cardboard casing on it with your address. They didn't do anything special.
Yeah. By the way,
to it. So obviously anybody see it, they steal it.
They steal. Yeah. Real quick. And I'm glad you're here, Reggie, killer, Weapon X, because this is what I was thinking. I'm like, I don't remember that being a thing at GameStop. So this is what he says. He goes, I didn't even know that GameStop had demos were a thing. And I used to work there.
Maybe they mean software, etc. EB Games.
Maybe that's what EB GZR Games means, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, because EB Games got always, like, back in the day when it was software, etc. and EB Games. EB Games used to get all the really cool pre-order shit.
Yeah.
So maybe you're talking about them, but we also didn't have one. We had one, but we rarely went to it.
Yeah. And when we used to go, it was just to, talk to our boy that used to work there,
Yeah.
So I think that's what he means, man. I'm like, I remember that being a thing at GameStop, All right. Toon Medic, Michael Santiago, he asked us a question that we've answered many times. What games do you like that other people don't like? So we've answered that a million times. People love asking us that question for some reason. All right. Anyway, and the last question of the night from Mr. Alpha Chuck, regarding WB Games willing to license its properties to other developers, which IPs would you like to see release a new title, and who should develop it? Good question. What games do they have? They have Batman, obviously, and a bunch of other shit.
I'm trying to think of what that bunch of other shit is. Batman and
I know they published The Witcher, but in America,
Hogwarts, does that count all Harry Potter?
I guess.
Wait, don't they own Shadow of Mordor?
They do. Yeah, that's another one. Yeah,
yeah.
I want to see that made by. And I haven't figured that second part out yet, but I'll get back to you.
But that's the franchise that you want back. Okay, so that's at least the first half of the question. I'm trying to find out what games they have here. List of Warner Brothers games.
On the website for WB Games. Yeah. Again, there's the Batman Arkham. There's, I guess, the Gotham also counts.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of Lego Star Wars, Mortal Kombat, Hogwarts, some game called Suicide Squad. Never heard of it.
Trash. It's mostly
trash. There's Back for Blood, apparently, is there. And Shadow of Mordor.
Oh, okay. Back for Blood, I remember that. Mortal Kombat, like you said.
Mortal Kombat is back, so that one's
yeah, that one's back, yeah.
It needs to go back and come back again.
Oh, shit, Yeah, Batman, Game of Thrones they have.
What Game of Thrones game?
It's some Game of Thrones game called Game of Thrones Conquest. It's a mobile game. That's why you never heard of it.
God, dude. No, nobody wants that to come back. Nobody wanted that in the first place.
Yeah, that's why. I don't know. I can't really answer this question. Mostly friends, I don't care about multiverses. I don't give a fuck about that. Hogwarts Legacy, I don't care. I don't, Mortal Kombat, keep them with NetherRealm for obvious reasons, you know?
I really want Shadow of Mordor to come back because it is the only game that can legally use the Nemesis system because
it's patented. That's true.
Who would be good to make it, though? Like, I'm sitting trying to think, like, who's good at game systems like that?
Yeah. You mean like the Nemesis system?
Yeah.
Nobody else does it. That's the problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, but like, I would guess, like, you know, who's good with building structured game systems that are kind of complex, like branching narrative, that kind of thing. Like, everything is so on rails these days.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Rich.
Question: would Larian be able to do that?
They would. Oh, right? God, yeah.
But they don't. That's not generally the type of game that they do.
No, they don't. Yeah.
And they don't do that type of game, but they do the whole complex narrative system type thing.
Yeah, they have like really complex inner working game systems. So,
let's do a collab. It's a From Software game, Larian Shadow of Mordor game. There you go, game of the century.
Game of the century.
Oh, it's like don't do that to my heart, man.
That's funny. All right.
But I don't know which one studio can do both. That's
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I have a question for Tony.
Yeah, what's up?
So, Tony, have you lost faith that somebody can make a Superman game? Would they? Is anybody qualified to do that?
I've never had faith in that. It's funny you mention that because I remember I wrote an article for, I think it was STFU and Play years ago. And the premise was, you know, Superman is my favorite character, but you can't make a game with him because it doesn't work. He's too fucking powerful. Because here's the problem with Superman. If you make him as powerful as he's supposed to be, then you're just going to steamroll through everybody. But if you weaken him, you're going to be pissed off because you're not playing as Superman, you know?
Okay, hold on. Disagree on two fronts.
Yeah, although, hold on real quick. But I did say on Throwdown, the only way it could work is if it's some kind of Telltale game where it's more narrative-based. It's not action-based. Then it could work. Then it's Superman handling some, like, shit that he doesn't have to punch, you know? Go ahead, Brett.
I mean, I feel like Prototype 2 was scaled up to that power level, and it still worked pretty well.
Superman could beat that guy in one punch, though.
Yeah, I mean, you could do some game gimmicky thing, like you took him down a couple of power levels or whatnot.
But that goes to my second point. You would have to scale Superman down, and then it would be deeply unsatisfying, you know?
No, you only have to scale him down a little bit. Like, Prototype 2 was ridiculously overpowered. Like, you were just mowing through tanks like they were made of cardboard the entire game.
Yeah, and that game wasn't that good, though.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. But the other big thing I was thinking is, like, it's kind of like a Spider-Man game. Until you see it really work, it's hard to think that it's going to work. And DC Universe did the flying mechanic the right way. It's the only game I've ever played where I felt like the flying mechanic was deeply satisfying.
Oh, yeah.
The same way swinging in Spider-Man is just deeply satisfying. And that honestly made at least 50% of that game for me.
Yeah, it was great. No other game has come close with that flying, man.
I feel like the only way that they can do a Superman game is if the constant point of failure isn't death.
Yeah. By the way, the Superman Returns game, their mechanic was Metropolis had a health bar. So you had to, because Superman, you can't kill Superman, but yeah, he had to defend the city and shit. So the city had a health bar.
That kind of makes sense.
Yeah, but that game didn't do very well, though. So you know,
well they'll do one of those buddy games where he's with Lois Lane the whole game and you have to defend Lois.
Oh, it's God, like
escort mission game.
It's funny, man. By the way, Jay Shep threw a last question in here. He goes, it's a non-gaming question, but I would argue it is a gaming question because it's still related to gaming. Who went to go see the Borderlands movie? The answer is nobody. The movie apparently made like $8 million from a budget of like $130 million or something. Nobody went to go see that shit.
I genuinely sitting there like, what do we look like? I can't think of anybody actually who saw this movie.
Nobody did. You know,
someone sent me a meme Yo, I couldn't fucking stop laughing. Oh, man. No. It was Goku and Vegeta saying, "Let's fight in a place that's empty." And then they fight in a theater where we're showing water.
Oh, man. One. Yeah, I think this movie is probably the biggest flop of the year, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it has no soul.
Around it, which was... So what impact do you think this will have on the Borderlands franchise as a whole and also on game-based movies going forward?
Mm. Here's the thing about Borderlands. Borderlands was already kind of gone, wasn't it? Like, you know, weren't people not happy with 3?
Yeah, it definitely 3 wasn't as big as 2 was.
Yeah,
in terms of reception and sales.
Yeah, like this franchise was definitely not at its high point anymore, you know?
Yeah. And you know, it's one of those things where most of the franchise video game franchise movies that do good are the ones that are zeitgeist, like Mario. And Mortal Kombat to an extent. So yeah, like it's Sonic does really well because it's a zeitgeist game. It doesn't really compare with, you know, Borderlands, because Borderlands is a popular game, but it's not, and a decreasingly popular game, but it's not anywhere near to the level of notoriety as the other ones. I'm trying to think, there's another one that was pretty recent that did good. I forget what it was.
Well, I mean, it's not a movie, but The Last of Us show, you know, well received.
Yeah. But The Last of Us, popularity wise, is way bigger than Borderlands.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, Rich, did you love the Borderlands movie when you went to go see it?
I have no plans of seeing it, but to answer Jay Sheff's question, he and everybody else can see it because this movie is coming to digital August 30th.
Wow.
So that's like only a couple of weeks.
Wait, is that official?
Yes, that is official.
I knew it. I called that shit. I'm like, watch this movie come to digital before the end of the month. Trash, you know?
So aren't you just like saving it for your birthday so you can like just settle down, wrap up, play some Back for Blood?
Yeah. Wow.
Oh no, I'm going to send this as a birthday present for Carlos. You know, I know, hey, listen, this is a great, or maybe a Christmas present for Carlos. I think that's a great idea.
That would be a first.
Yeah. Give him a digital copy, you know. It's hilarious. It has to be embarrassing to do worse at the box office than Madam Web. Damn.
Madam Web. I'm surprised. They haven't there. Well, I don't know if there's been talks, but you know, Deadpool video game. Video game would be pretty neat.
Well, they had one, remember, for the PS4.
Yeah, but I'm like more after post. Was it post Ryan Reynolds?
This was before Ryan Reynolds, I believe, because Nolan North was the voice. Mm. Because of course Nolan North was the voice.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, no, but you know, Manny brought up the point. It's like Xbox could have re-released this fucking game. You know, to tie in with the movie.
Yeah,
they own the rights to it now. You know,
they could have, because it's obvious that every single thing that was attached to this thing seemed to be doing well. The popcorn buckets, all the toys are doing well. All that shit's doing good.
The fucking NSYNC and Madonna videos are blowing up now.
NSYNC and Madonna are getting, you know, resurgence in popularity with younger people. So. Come on, guys, wake the fuck up.
Yeah,
the rights to mm-hmm. You have the right. You now own the company that made a bunch of Marvel games. Look through the shit, contact fucking Marvel and be like, okay, we want to make these things available for the release of the thing. They did it for a fucking console, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They made themselves a stupid Xbox that has an ass on it. Great. That's wonderful. Why don't they just do that too?
Yeah.
Essentially extend it outward. You put it up for a decent price. You know that most Xbox 360 games and most Xbox One games still do work on the new current console. Maybe the 360 game might need a little bit of looking into, but their backward compatibility thing seems to work fucking amazingly, where it upscales things and it friggin' runs them at like 1080, like, you know, at a higher resolution. Yeah. So you could have did that with the previous generation Deadpool game. and then you could have put out the other one. And if they want to, you know, maybe because you know, Microsoft is at that thing like, oh well, we don't want to leave any gamer behind on anything, and so, you know, maybe they could put it out on PlayStation 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, on PlayStation. Yeah,
The Deadpool game, not the Wolverine game.
Yeah,
Barry, that was PlayStation 3.
Yeah, wasn't that also on 360 though?
It was on 360. That's what I was saying. It was a 360. Yep. You put out the 360 Wolverine, X-Men Origins Wolverine game,
yep.
And then you put out the Xbox One version of the Deadpool game.
Yeah. Barry Burns goes, they should have called it Borderlands and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Tiny Tina. That's a nice deep cut there. let me see. Reggie says they did have to wait too long for that. Borderlands is making a name for itself. Yeah, that's the other thing. I was watching this video, you know, about why this movie bombed. You know, aside from, you know, people kind of getting sick of anything that looks like it might be perceived as girl boss. This is an interesting point the guy brought up. He says the Furiosa movie bombed, right? And to a regular person, this kind of looks like more of that, you know? So they're like, well, we didn't go see that. We're not going to see this either. You know, so I don't know if that's the case, but it sounds pretty interesting. Then you have kind of better products out there like Fallout. It's like, I'd rather watch that instead, you know, both post-apocalyptic and stuff. But I thought that was an interesting point.
But I feel like in general, the fault, like from what I can see, and I don't know if Brett can attest to this, it seems like the Fallout show was very much more connected to the world. Like it seemed like it could be another story within the world of Fallout. Whereas it seems like this Borderlands movie is literally, you know, the choice cuts of whatever was in a Borderlands of the game with, you know, starring Jamie Lee Curtis and what's his face?
Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I have some weird casting. Go ahead, Britt.
I think it's really what it is like the show seemed to pay reverence to the video game. It seemed to, I know some people are going deep cut, be like, oh, this retcon thing's like, it didn't really seem to, and it at least tried not to retcon. There was at least an obvious attempt to pay attention to the previous lore and work with that previous lore to make it seem kind of connected, like it could be part of the world. I think a big part of it too is like, I know that it's like, yeah, all the writing's good, so that helps. But the writing being good did help the main character. Like, I saw the thing, and I was immediately like, cool. So this looks like another, just by the casting, it looked like another, like, cool. So it's going to copy Star Wars. But then, like, and it kind of did in a lot of ways. But, like, so the main character in Fallout is kind of like Rey. If Rey didn't suck, if Rey actually had to learn to do things, like if Rey started incompetent and kind of sucked, and like, so there's a genuine character arc there. Even the way that, like, in the beginning of this show, she's the way she says okie dokie kind of becomes her kind of not a catchphrase, but like you see her saying it throughout the series and meaning it, like the meaning kind of drifts to this, you know, she starts very happy and then it starts being this kind of disconnected, disillusioned kind of thing. And then ends with like her being resolved to doing what you have to do kind of thing. And so there was a lot of interesting character arc in there. There was a lot of growth. There was a lot of difference between the character. Like, I didn't think that the ghoul was going to work, but the way that they did it, it actually worked. So I think a lot of people kind of looked at it with skepticism and then they go in and they're like, oh, this is actually done well. And I know that that sounds stupid and pedantic and overly simple to be like, oh, characters who are written well are more well received than characters who aren't. But apparently I think Hollywood, at least some people there, need to be fucking told this lesson.
Right. Because,
you know, they just make horribly insufferable characters that you don't like and don't identify with and that don't grow or have any room to grow. And then wonder, you know, they basically break every rule of good writing and then wonder why people don't like the thing that they did. And while, you know, you can go avant-garde and do your own thing and break some rules, I think, like, you know, people like Manny, who have been involved with, you know, the creation of story creation, can attest to, you can bend some rules, you can even break a couple, but you can't just, there's a reason good things are considered good. There's a reason we can teach art, and we can teach writing, and we can teach, you know, things that are technically kind of subjective. There's a reason we can teach those to people. We can help them get better, and why people get better with practice, because there is kind of a objectively more right way to do some things. I won't say that it's entirely objective, because I think there's a lot of room for taste in there, but a well-crafted character arc is going to be more well-received than a non-character arc of a Mary Sue. And that's just the way it is. That's the way of reality. And that has nothing to do with subjective taste. That just has to do with, like, all right, you need to meet certain qualifications. You know, like, just, like, yeah, some people may hear just noise and be like, that's good jazz. But 95% of us are going to be like, that was just a bunch of bad noise. So, you know, and ultimately what we're going for here is to, for wide range art is, you know, not experimental art, is to have your art accepted and understood by a large audience. And while you don't want to make major concessions for that, it needs to be at least enough that you're not choking the soul out of it. And that's exactly what Borderlands is. It's choking the soul out of it for every last fucking dollar while paying no regard to the quality that you're actually putting out, which is honestly, it's just insulting to fans. I'm not even a Borderland fan, but like, that kind of thing is insulting to fans, and it breeds vitriol. And that kind of vitriol breeds people to go out and evangelize your counterpoint, where they want to get on the internet and talk about what a god-awful abortion this is. Mm-hmm. And then guess what? Other people aren't going to see it, and you've lost a bunch of money because you didn't care about the quality of your end product. And so I think it's just as simple as that. Not always, but in terms of things like this, like, you know why it's not making any money? Because it's bad. You know why it's bad? Because it wasn't trying to be good. It was trying to just be a cash grab. People saw that, and they're like, this can burn in hell. And I think it's honestly as simple as that.
I wonder when companies are going to realize that just because you have a name on it doesn't automatically mean the fans of that thing will go see it. When are you guys going to realize that's not the case? The product still needs to be good, you know?
I can tell you when. When they realize that it is not the thing directly preceding the previous thing that you need to look like. If we're making Cat Wars 1, right? And people fucking love Cat Wars 1, and you come out with Cat Wars 2, and it is a shitty shitty cash grab, and you still make good numbers, people will look at that and be like, oh, people still liked it. We can keep doing that. No, you got those numbers because of Cat Wars 1.
That's right.
You need to look at the numbers for Cat Wars 3 to find out what the reception for Cat Wars 2 really was. And then you do Cat Wars 3, and you're like, oh, people don't like the same thing we just did for Cat Wars 2. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense unless you view it through the lens of, this shit takes time. And when you ruin your good faith, it's not going to show up directly in the box office ticket sales of the thing you just ruined people's good faith with. They didn't know it was going to be that terrible when they bought the fucking ticket, because they had to buy the ticket before they saw the goddamn thing.
Yep. No, you're 100% right. And that's why Borderlands bombed. So there you go. What a waste. I I'm not a fan of the franchise either, but I do feel bad for, like, the legitimate fans, you know, that they got that dreck.
Yeah.
You know, very upsetting.
I mean, it's like, it's a weird thing. Because, like, why spend like $100 million on this? Like, you did you need to get Kevin Hart and Jamie
Lee Curtis? Probably because you had to pay Kate Blanchett, Jamie Lee Curtis. I guarantee you, Manny, half that money was probably on the fucking cast, you know?
Yeah, you could have literally got a cast that sort of fit the roles a little bit better. I mean, I like Jamie Lee Curtis and Kate Blanchett, but I mean, even when you saw the trailer, they're like, aren't they a little bit old to be playing those characters?
And you're being generous when you say a little bit old, you know?
So it's I feel like they could have cast, you know, lower down the totem pole carrot sort of people to this thing, and then they could have probably gotten the writing under control. And number two, it's Eli Roth. Ugh,
I remember Eli that name. Yeah. I think this thing was just doomed from the beginning, man. And remember, it was supposed to come out. It was supposed to come out like years ago, you know.
I had to go through all these reshoots and all this other garbage.
I still couldn't fix it. I would ask, like, I don't know, man. Like, who, like, some of the decisions, I'm like, who is this even for? Like, the people who actually liked, really liked, like, I didn't dislike it, but the people who actually really liked the first Borderlands, you know, not even, I'm going to lump myself in this, even though I'm just kind of like a passing fan, right? Like,
Did anybody see Claptrap wheel out and find themselves pleasantly surprised to hear Jack Black's voice instead of, you know, Claptrap's voice?
Oh my God, they did that, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They did do that. Like, you know, like, again, like, Jack Black is in it. Why not? Like, people don't get, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people like Jack Black, but what if it was the actual guy that played Claptrap? You remember the guy that was fighting fucking, the actual game company to get paid? Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Get him.
You'd think that, like, then people who liked the game would hear his voice in the movie and be like, oh, hey, it's the guy from the thing, mm-hmm. you know, like. But no,
yeah, it's the original voice.
Oh, I'm surprised. And I'm convinced nobody went, oh, wow, it's Jack Black. That's awesome. Nobody fucking said that. Probably maybe one goddamn person. And they still didn't see your movie.
That's right. Oh, my God.
So I was looking into this a bit more, and it turns out that Cate Blanchett did this film first. And then she went on to do another film called Tar, if anyone's heard of that. And that film released 2 years ago. So
wow,
that just shows you just how much hell this game has been in. And what's the game?
Movie.
This movie has been in. Movie. And it's just, it's laughable. And apparently, Randy Pitchford, because of course, Randy Pitchford, he's been having a meltdown and blocking people on Twitter that don't like this movie because he's a grown person.
Yeah.
He's a baby. Oh, poor Randy. Oh.
Oh, I have another question.
Does Randy need an ice cream?
This question is guaranteed to make Tony laugh.
Uh-oh.
Question. Do you think that Uwe Boll would have made a better film?
Probably. Probably. Anybody would have, you know.
I feel like Uwe Boll at least would have made a bad movie that didn't cost that much.
Yeah, and it would have been, you know? it at least would have been so good, so bad it's good, you know? It at least would have been that. This is just bad, you know? This is just so bad it's bad. It's crazy, man. All right, I think that'll do it for us. I'm glad we got to roast that fucking dumbass movie. Rich, what's going on with the Coalition, man?
Oh, yeah. So as I mentioned on the last show, it's going to be a very busy month this month. There'll be plenty of things that'll be covered on the website. I actually posted a review for Kena Bridge of Spirits on Xbox. Yes, if you haven't played this game yet, even though it has been on PlayStation and PC since 2021, you should definitely check it out. The game is a lot of fun. And yeah, there's going to be more reviews and previews getting posted up in the next couple of weeks. You know, we got Gamescom and then we got PAX West 2 weeks apart from each other. So stay tuned. Plenty of things coming down the pike.
Yeah, busy times, man. Busy times. All right, people, you already know we are done here. So make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Join the Discord where the conversations and the rumors are always popping. You can also find us on any podcast app on the planet. Throwdown Show. That's two words, Throwdown Show. ThrowdownShow.com, so listen to past episodes. And if you have been watching us on the YouTubes and like the video, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified of when we go live, baby. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
Everybody want some cheese?
Yeah, bring that cheese. Bring your cheese. Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good week, everybody.
And Brian Manjoma.
I can't tell if she was breakdancing or having a seizure.
I don't know. I think she, you know, honestly, I think she grifted, she grifted her way in there. She's like, hey, I'm a good enough breakdancer. Send me to Paris. She goes to Paris. She sucks, but doesn't matter. She got a free trip to Paris, you know? So, yeah, I don't know, man. That was ridiculous.
You forgot to do an Australian accent.
I don't know how to do Australian accents, man.
You're like, Crocky, yeah. I can break dance.
Yeah, or Crocky's a ship on a Barbie, I will. I don't know. Oi, governor. It was the good word. Remember that from
That's
the Simpsons?
That's a Cockney accent.
I don't know. Like I said, I'm not into a fucking Australian accent, you know? Anyway, we will be back on Thursday. The road to 500 continues. Later.
500.
Deuces.